Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing with Solomon's Prayer of Dedication, as we pick up in 2 Chronicles, chapter 6, verse 1. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
Then Solomon said, "The Lord hath said..." Now, at this point, they've got the temple furnished, the glory has come down, and Solomon has built this little platform for himself to stand upon to address the people, and then to kneel upon to pray as he offers his prayer of dedication. So he is now standing on this little platform, about 4.5 feet high and about 7.5 feet square, just a little platform that had been made for this purpose. And Solomon, addressing the people, said, "The Lord hath said that he would dwell in the thick darkness. But I have built a house of habitation for him, the place of his dwelling forever." And the king turned his face and blessed the whole congregation of Israel, and all of the congregation stood. And he said, "Blessed be Jehovah God of Israel, who hath with his hands fulfilled that which he spake with his mouth to my father David." God had promised David that though he could not build the house, that God would give him a son who would reign on the throne after him, and this son would build the house. So Solomon is aware of this promise to David and aware of his obligation to build this house. Now it's complete. "Blessed be Jehovah," or Yahweh, "the God of Israel, who with his hands has fulfilled that which he spoke to my father, saying, 'Since the day that I brought forth my people out of the land of Egypt, I chose no city among all the tribes of Israel to build a house in, that my name might be there. Neither chose I any man to be ruler over my people Israel. But I have chosen Jerusalem, that my name might be there, and I have chosen David to be over my people Israel." So, though from the beginning there was no city nor king, now God has chosen the city of Jerusalem, and God has chosen David as the man to rule over the people. "Now it was in the heart of David, my father, to build a house for the name of Yahweh, God of Israel. But Yahweh said to David, my father, 'Forasmuch as it was in your heart to build a house for my name, you did well that it was in your heart.'" So that God accounted that which was in the heart of David as having done it. As God accounts what's in our hearts. Now, not always are we able to fulfill what is in our hearts to do for the Lord. Sometimes through lack of opportunity, and sometimes being unqualified, as David was unqualified to build the house. And yet we have this strong desire in our hearts. I desire in my heart to do this for God. And God looks on my heart. He sees the heart's desire and he accounts that. He gives credit to me for what is the desire of my heart to do. Now, David surely expressed this as a strong desire of his heart, because when he was not allowed to build the temple. At least he drew the plans and he gathered the materials, the gold in abundance and the cedars in abundance. And he had the stones hewn and he had the thing all set. But it was in the heart of David to do it. Now, that is great if your heart is right. But if your heart is not right, then God also sees that which is in your heart. And God judges us more from the attitudes of our hearts than from our actions. Because a person's actions may be perfectly correct, but the attitude of their heart is wrong. And God looks on the hearts of man, where man judges from appearances. And man looks on the outward. God looks on your heart. He knows what's in your heart. And so Jesus told us that out of the heart proceed all of this wickedness. God saw in the times of Noah that the imagination of the hearts of man was continually evil. That is why David prayed, "Create in me a clean heart, O Lord." A change of heart, that is what we need. A heart that is after God rather than a heart that is after the flesh and the things of the flesh. And I need for God to create in me a clean heart, a pure heart. And Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." And so what's in my heart, what's in your heart? That's what's so important. You see, I can be motivated to do things by other motivations than love. I love for God. I can be motivated to do things by fear. I can be motivated to do things by a desire for recognition and glory. The Pharisees were doing their whole little righteous scene in order to be seen of men, to receive the praises of men. And Jesus said, "Ye are they which seek the praises of men, receiving the honors from man." But he said, you ought to be more interested in God's opinion of you rather than man's opinion of you. And God looks at the heart and he sees what's in the heart. Oh, God, create in me a clean heart. God, make me pure, pure in heart. So it was in the heart of David. God said, because it's in your heart, you did well. Notwithstanding, God said, though it's in your heart to do it, you shall not build the house, but your son, which shall come forth out of your loins, he shall build the house for my name. And the Lord therefore hath performed his word that he has spoken. God said this to David, and now God has done it. Oh, it's always so great when you see the fulfilled promises of God. You stand there, and God had promised, and now it's a reality. For so long, it was just a dream. And a lot of times I've found in building programs, you can get bogged down, and you think, will this thing ever get finished? But oh, that glorious day when it's all done. You've got the final inspection. You know, the whole thing is now operational. And that's always a glorious experience. And now the temple is operational. We're moving in. God has kept his word. God promised my father David that he would raise up a son and would build a house. And I've done it. It's complete. Here it is in all of its glorious splendor. The Lord has performed his word that he spoke, for I have risen up in the place of my father David, and I am sitting on the throne of Israel as the Lord promised, and I have built the house for the name of Yahweh, God of Israel. And in it have I put the ark, wherein is the covenant of the Lord, which he made with the children of men. So, it's done. It's, you know, God has come down and filled his temple. And he stood before the altar of the Lord in the presence of all of the congregation of Israel, and he spread forth his hands. For Solomon had made this little brass scaffold, 7.5 feet long and 7.5 feet wide and 4.5 feet tall. He set it there in the middle of the court, and he stood upon it as he talked to the people. But then as he went to talk to God, he kneeled upon his knees before all of the congregation of Israel, and he spread forth his hands toward heaven. And so get the picture now. Here is this temple, marvelous, gloriously splendid. Here is King Solomon in all of his royal glory and wealth. And here is this little brass scaffolding platform. And now the king is kneeling, having acknowledged the faithfulness of God to keep his word. And he's kneeling and his hands are stretched up towards heaven. And he begins to offer to God this prayer of dedication as he dedicates now this house unto the Lord. So get it in your mind. Get the picture. The people are gathered. And Solomon said, O Yahweh, God of Israel, there is no God like thee in heaven or in earth, which keeps the covenant and shows mercy unto thy servants that walk before thee with all their hearts. David had walked before the Lord with all of his heart. And thus God kept the covenant that he made with David, and God was merciful to David, even as God is merciful to us if our hearts are committed to him, who shows mercy to the servants that walk before thee with all their heart. Thou which hast kept with thy servant David my father that which you promised him, that which you spoke with your mouth, you have fulfilled in your hand, and we see it this day. This is the fulfillment. We see it. We testify to it. Now, therefore, O Yahweh, God of Israel, keep with thy servant David, my father, that which thou hast promised him, saying, there shall not fail thee a man in my sight to sit upon the throne of Israel, yet so that thy children take heed to their way to walk in my law as thou hast walked before me. So, Lord, you've kept your promise. We see the temple, but you also promised my father that there would never cease one of his seed from sitting on the throne. Now, that, of course, we haven't yet seen. Here I am, but you know what's going to happen after me. And you promise that if his descendants will walk in your ways, there will never cease one from David sitting upon the throne. Notice that that is a conditional promise, if they would walk in the ways of the Lord. I count as non-biblical and nonsensical that the Queen of England today is a direct descendant of David, for it is the only continuing monarchy, and that Jeremiah spirited off one of the princes, one of the descendants of David, went to England, and there, you know, that descendant of David became the leader over England. The word ish in Hebrew is the word for man, and so you have the 10 tribes of Israel having fled, and the Dan-ish people are the descendants of Dan, Dan-ish, the men of Dan, the Brit-ish. I don't know what tribe Brit was, but the Brit-ish. And so they try to make this whole fabricated kind of a story. Because God's promise to David, you know, thus you have to have someone sitting on the throne because God said never cease. God's promise was conditional, if they will follow me and keep my covenant. What happened to Zedekiah? What happened to Jeconiah and to those? They broke the covenant of God. Read the prophets and see how that God, because they had broken the covenant, said he was going to cut them off. He was going to cut off the monarchy. And they did not keep the covenant of God, and thus the promise that was made to David was fulfilled in Jesus Christ, and he shall sit upon the throne forever. There are the Danish people, and there are the Swedish people, and there are the British people, and there are the foolish people too. So, having acknowledged God has kept the covenant, the promise, Lord, continue to keep with thy servant David, my father, that which you have promised him concerning his descendants there upon the throne of Israel. If those children take heed to walk in the law. Now then, O Yahweh God of Israel, let the word be verified which you have spoken unto your servant David. But will God indeed dwell with men on the earth? Behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee, how much less this house that I have built. He had a true concept of God, and that is that God is omnipresent. He fills the entire universe. And thus God cannot be localized. If the whole universe cannot contain God, how much less this house that I have built? Sometimes I fear lest we have a sense of God being in a certain place. We develop that because there are places where God has revealed himself to us or God has met us, and they become a special place because of an experience that I had with God in that place. There are several places in which I've had a very marvelous experience of the presence of God, where God met me. Now, there is a tendency to sort of make an altar in that place and to begin to worship the place. Oh, I long to go back to that tree, because I was sitting under that tree in the evening, worshiping the Lord, and the Lord came and began to deal with me and deal with the issues of my life. And there he challenged me to commit myself totally to him and to serve him. And I remember that tree there in Camp Radford, where I was sitting there that evening when God was dealing with me. Glorious. And sometimes in times of spiritual dryness, you know, and our relationship with God is sort of cooled a bit, we think, oh, if I could only go back and sit under that tree again. There's where I can meet God. Hey, you can meet God wherever you are. You don't need a tree. I went back to Radford and they cut the tree down. I don't know how they could be so sacrilegious, you know. So they know God met me there. But we need to realize that God will meet me anywhere. That God is everywhere. And yes, we have this place where we come and meet God. We have this place where God manifests his presence to us. But if this place should burn down, God would still meet with us. If we were out there in the yard or out in the football field, God would meet with us. If we were on the beach, no matter where, the Lord fills the universe. He doesn't occupy one place in it, but he occupies the entire universe. And if the entire universe cannot hold God, how much less this house that I have built? But yet, Lord, have respect, therefore, to the prayer of your servant and to his supplication. O Jehovah, my God, hearken unto the cry and the prayer which your servant prays before you, that your eyes will be open upon this house day and night, upon the place whereof thou hast said that you would put your name there, to hearken to the prayers which your servant prayed towards this place. So, Lord, I know that the universe can't contain you, but do let your eyes be upon this place that we have made and built and have dedicated unto thee. And when people come here to pray, Lord, let them really experience the power of your presence and the answers to their prayers. Hearken, therefore, unto the supplications of thy servant and of thy people Israel, which they shall make toward this place, Hear thou from thy dwelling place, even from heaven, and when you hear, forgive. And so, Lord, let them turn towards this place to pray. Now, it became and is still the custom of the Jews when they pray to turn towards Jerusalem. No matter where they are, they always seek to face Jerusalem when they pray. You remember in the book of Daniel, when the decree was made that by Darius that if any man should pray to any other person other than the king for a period of 30 days, he was to be put to death. And Daniel, when he knew the king had signed the decree, went, as he was accustomed of doing, three times a day into his home, opened the windows towards Jerusalem, and prayed unto the Lord. But he was facing, and they always do, they face Jerusalem because of this prayer of Solomon. If they turn and face this place, Lord, as they pray. So it has become the practice and the custom of the Jew to face Jerusalem when they pray. And if they turn toward this place, then hearken from your place in heaven. And when you hear, forgive.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse study through the book of 2 Chronicles in our next lesson, as we continue with Solomon's Prayer of Dedication. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD, and phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of 2 Chronicles. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
May the Lord bless you and guide you as you go this week. As you face the many temptations, may the Lord give you strength, and may you walk and live after the Spirit, and may you respond after the Spirit. In the temptation, may you not yield to the flesh and react after the flesh. May your life be pleasing unto God as our actions come into harmony with our declarations of what we believe. May we show it in the works that we do, in Jesus' name.
Life was easy for Charles Tex Watson, but it didn't feel complete. Something or someone was missing. So Tex looked to fill his emptiness, and his search led him right into the arms of Charles Manson, forever linking him with one of the most gruesome and cold-blooded crimes in history. The Word for Today presents the DVD, The Power of Forgiveness, The Tex Watson Story. Watch and listen to Pastor Chuck as he interviews Susan LaBerge, the daughter of murdered victim Rosemary LaBianca, who was killed by Tex Watson. And when Susan came to Christ, she knew she had to forgive everyone in her life. and that included Tex. See how this dramatic story of God's mercy and forgiveness will challenge you to forgive the unforgivable. For more information on how you can order the Power of Forgiveness DVD, please call The Word for Today at 1-800-272-9673 or visit us online at thewordfortoday.org.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.